The fact is, ventured Temple, we will soon be building on this plot.
How are you going to manage that with me here?
I was hoping you could be persuaded to move. The beggar checked every part of his bone for further sustenance, and finding none, tossed it at Temple. It bounced off his shirt.
You ain't gonna persuade me of nothing without a drink.
The thing is, this plot belongs to my employer, Abram Mahood, and—
Who says so?
Who says?
Do I fucking stutter?
The man took out his knife as if he had some everyday task that required one, but the subtext was plain. It really was a very large blade, and, given the prevailing filthiness of everything else within 10 strides, impressively clean, edge glittering with the morning sun.
I asked, who says?
Temple took a wobbly step back, straight into something very solid. He spun about, expecting to find himself face to face with one of the other tent dwellers, probably sporting an even bigger knife. God knew there were so many big knives in Crease, the distinction between them and swords was a total blur, and was hugely relieved to find Lamb towering over him.
I say, said Lamb to the beggar, you could ignore me, you could wave that knife around a little more, but you might find you're wearing it up your ass.
The man looked down at his blade, perhaps wishing he had opted for a smaller one after all. Then he put it sheepishly away.
Reckon I'll just move along.
Lamb gave that a nod.
I reckon.
Can I get my trousers?
You'd fucking better.
He ducked into his tent and came out buttoning up the most ragged article of clothing Temple ever saw.
I'll leave the tent, if it's all the same. Ain't that good a one?
You don't say, said Temple. The man loitered a moment longer.
Any chance of that drink, do you—
Get gone,
growled Lamb, and the beggar scampered off like he'd a mean dog at his heels.
There you are, Master Lamb,
Mahood waded over, trouser legs held up by both hands to display 2 lean lengths of muddy calf.
I was hoping to persuade you to work on my behalf, and here I find you already hard at it.
There's nothing, said Lamb.
Still, if you could help us clear the site, I'd be happy to pay you.
Don't worry about it.
Truly?
The watery sun gleamed from Mahood's golden tooth.
If you were to do me this favor, I would consider you a friend for life.
I should warn you, friend of mine can be a dangerous position.
I feel it is worth the risk.
If it'll save a couple of bits, threw in Temple.
I got all the money I need, said Lamb, but I always been sadly short on friends.
He frowned over at the vagrant with the underclothes, just poking his head out of his tent and into the light.
You!
And the man darted back inside like a tortoise into its shell. Mahood raised his brows at Temple.
If only everyone was so accommodating. Not everyone has been obliged to sell themselves into slavery.
You could have said no.
Shai was on the rickety porch of the building next door, leaning on the rail with boots crossed and fingers dangling. For a moment, Temple hardly recognized her. She had a new shirt, sleeves rolled up with her tanned forearms showing, one with the old rope burn coiled pink around it, a sheepskin vest on top, which was no doubt yellow by any reasonable estimation, but looked white as a heavenly visitation in the midst of all that dirt. The same stained hat, but tipped back, hair less greasy and more red, stirring in the breeze. Temple stood and looked at her, and found he quite enjoyed it.
You look clean. Something like that.
You look surprised.
Little bit.
Did you think I stunk out of choice?
No. I thought you couldn't help yourself.
She spat daintily through the gap between her front teeth, narrowly missing his boots.
Then you discover your error. The mayor was kind enough to lend me her bath.
Bathing with the mayor, eh? She winked.
Moving up in the world.
Temple plucked at his own shirt, only held together by the more stubborn stains.
Do you think she'd give me a bath?
You could ask, but I reckon there's about a 4 in 5 chance she'd have you killed.
I like those odds. Lots of people are 5 in 5 on my untimely death.
Something to do with you being a lawyer.
As of today, I will have you know, I am a carpenter and architect.
Well, your professions slip on and off easy as a whore's drawers, don't they?
A man must follow the opportunities.
He turned to take in the plot with an airy wave.
I am contracted to build upon this unrivaled site a residence and place of business for the firm of Mahood and Kernsbeck.
My congratulations on leaving the legal profession and becoming a respectable member of the community.
Do they have such a thing in Crease?
Not yet, but I reckon it's on the way. You stick a bunch of drunken murderers together, ain't long before some turn to thieving, then to lying, then to bad language, and pretty soon to sobriety, raising families and making an honest living.
It's a slippery slope, all right.
Temple watched Lamb shepherd a tangle-haired drunkard off the plot, few possessions dragging in the muck behind him.
Is the mayor going to help you find your brother and sister?
Shai gave a long sigh.
Maybe, but she's got a price. Nothing comes for free. Nothing.
How's carpenter's pay?
Temple winced.
Barely enough to scrape by on, sadly.
2 marks a day plus benefits,
called Mahood as he dismantled the most recently vacated tent.
I've known bandits kinder to their victims.
2 marks from that miser? Chai gave an approving nod. Well done. I'll take a mark a day towards the debt.
A mark, Temple managed to force out. Very reasonable.
If there was a god, his bounty was only lent, never given.
I thought the fellowship dissolved.
Dab Sweet pulled his horse up beside the plot, crying rock haunting his shoulder. Neither of them appeared to have ventured within spitting range of a bath, or a change of clothes, either. Temple found that strangely reassuring.
Bookhorn's out of town with his grass and his water. Lestek's dressing the theatre for his grand debut, and most of the rest split up to dig gold their own way. But here's the 4 of you, still inseparable. Warms my heart that I forged such camaraderie out in the wilderness.
Don't pretend you've got a heart, said Shai.
Gotta be something pumps the black poison through my veins, don't there?
Ah!
Shouted Mahood.
If it is not the new Emperor of the Plains, the conqueror of Great Sanjeed, Dab Sweet!
The scout gave Lamb a nervous sideways glance.
I've made no effort to spread that rumor.
And yet it has taken to this town like fire to tinder. I have heard 6 versions, none particularly close to my own remembrance. Most recently, I was told you shot the ghost from a mile's distance and with a stiff side wind.
I heard you impaled them on the horns of an enraged steer, said Shai.
And in the newest version to reach my ear, said Temple, you killed him in a duel over the good name of a woman.
Sweet snorted.
Where the hell do they get this rubbish? Everyone knows there's no woman of my acquaintance with a good name. This your plot?
It is, said Mahood.
It is a plot,
said Crying Rock solemnly.
Mahood has contracted me to build a shop upon it, said Temple.
More buildings?
Sweet wriggled his shoulders.
Bloody roofs hanging over you, walls bearing in on you. How can you take a breath in those things?
Crying Rock shook her head.
Buildings.
A man can't think of nothing when he's in one, but how to get back out. I'm a wanderer, and that's a fact. Born to be under the sky.
Sweet watched Lamb drag another wriggling drunk from a tent one-handed and toss him rolling into the street.
Man has to be what he is, don't he?
She frowned up. He can try to be otherwise.
But more often than not, it don't stick. All that trying day after day, it wears you right through.
The old scout gave her a wink.
Lamb taking up the mayor's offer?
We're thinking on it, she snapped back. Temple looked from one to the other. Am I missing something?
Usually, said Shai, still giving Sweet the eyeball. If you're heading on out of town, don't let us hold you up.
Wouldn't dream of it.
The old scout pointed down the main street, busier with traffic as the day wore on, weak sun raising a little steam from the wet mud, the wet horses, the wet roofs.
We're signed up to guide a fellowship of prospectors into the hills. Always work for guides around Crease. Everyone here wants to be somewhere else.
Not I, said Mahood, grinning as Lamb kicked another tent over.
Oh, no.
Sweet gave the plot a final glance, smile lurking at the corner of his mouth.
You lot are right where you belong.
And he trotted on out of town, Crying Rock at his side. Words and Graces. Shai didn't much care for pretension, and despite having crawled through more than her share, was no high enthusiast for dirt. The dining room of Camling's hostelry was an unhappy marriage of the two, uglier by far than either one alone. The tabletops were buffed to a prissy shine, but the floor was caked with boot mud. The cutlery had bone handles, but the walls were spattered hip-high with ancient food. There was a gilt-framed painting of a nude, who'd found something to smirk about, but the plaster behind was blistered with mould from a leak above.
"State of this place," muttered Lamb.
"That's Crease for you," said Shai. "Everything upside down."
On the trail, she'd heard the stream beds in the hills were lined with nuggets, just itching for greedy fingers to pluck them free. Some lucky few who'd struck gold in Crease might have dug it from the earth, but it looked to Shai like most had found a way to dig it out of other folks. It weren't prospectors crowding the dining room of Camlings and forming a grumpy queue besides. It was pimps and gamblers, racketeers and moneylenders, and merchants peddling the same stuff they might anywhere else at half the quality and four times the price.
"A damn superfluity of shysters," muttered Shai, as she stepped over a pair of dirty boots and dodged a careless elbow. "This the future of the far country?"
"Of every country," muttered Lamb.
"Please, please, my friends, do sit." Camling, the proprietor, was a long, oily bastard, with a suit wearing through at the elbows and a habit of laying soft hands where they weren't wanted, which had already nearly earned him Shai's fist in his face. He was busy flicking crumbs from a table perched on an ancient column top some creative carpenter had laid the floorboards around.
"We try to stay neutral, but any friend of the mayor's is a friend of mine, indeed they are."
"I'll face the door," said Lamb, shifting his chair around.
Camling drew out the other for Shai.
"And may I say how positively radiant you are this morning?"
"You could say it, but I doubt anyone will be taking your word over the evidence of their senses."
She levered her way to sitting, not easy, since the ancient carvings on the column were prone to interfere with her knees.
"On the contrary, you are a positive ornament to my humble dining room."
Shai frowned up, a slap in the face she could take in good part, but all this fawning she didn't trust in the least.
"How about you bring the food and hold on to the blather?"
Camling cleared his throat.
"Of course,"
and slipped away into the crowd.
"That Corlin over there?"
She was wedged into a shadowy corner, eyeing the gathering with her mouth pressed into that tight line of hers, like it'd take a couple of big men with pick and crowbar to get a word out.
"If you say so," said Lamb, squinting across the room. "My eyes ain't all they were."
"I say so. And Savian, too. Thought they were meant to be prospecting."
"Thought you didn't believe they would be."
"Looks like I was right."
"You usually are."
"I'd swear she saw me."
"And?"
"And she ain't given so much as a nod."
Maybe she wishes she hadn't seen you.
Wishing don't make it so. Shai slipped from the table, having to make room for a big bald bastard who insisted on waving his fork around when he talked.
There's still a few coming in, but less than we hoped. Can't be sure how many more will turn up. Sounds like Molkova was bad.
Savian stopped short when he saw Shai coming. There was a stranger wedged even further into the shadows between him and Corlin under a curtained window.
Corlin, said Shai.
Shai, said Corlin.
Savian,
said Shai. He just nodded.
I thought you two were out digging.
We're putting it off a while.
Corlin held Shai's eye all the time.
Might leave in a week, might be later. Lot of other folks coming through with the same idea. You want to claim aught but mud, you'd best get into them hills.
The hills have been there since great Eos drove the devils from the world, said the stranger. I predict that they will persist into next week.
He was an odd one, with bulging eyes, a long tangle of grey beard, and hair and eyebrows hardly shorter. Odder yet, Shai saw now he had a pair of little birds, tame as puppies, pecking seed from his open palm.
And you are? Asked Shai.
My name is Zacharus.
Like the Magus?
Just like.
Seemed a foolish sort of thing to take the name of a legendary wizard, but then you might have said the same for naming a woman after social awkwardness.
Shai South.
She reached for his hand, and an even smaller bird hopped from his sleeve and snapped at her finger, gave her the hell of a shock, and made her jerk it back.
And, that's Lam over there. We rolled out from the near country in a fellowship with these two. Faced down ghosts and storms and rivers, and an awful lot of boredom. High times, eh?
Towering,
said Corlin, eyes narrowed to blue slits. Shai was getting the distinct feeling they wanted her somewhere else, and that was making her want to stay.
And what's your business, Master Zacharus?
The turning of ages.
He had a trace of an imperial accent, but it was strange somehow, crackly as old papers.
The currents of destiny, the rise and fall of nations.
There's a good living in that.
He flashed a faintly crazy smile made of a lot of jagged yellow teeth.
There is no bad living and no good death.
Right you are. What's with the birds?
They bring me news, companionship, songs when I am melancholy, and on occasion nesting materials.
You have a nest?
No, but they think I should.
Of course they do.
The old man was mad as a mushroom, but she doubted folk hard-headed as Corlin and Savian would be wasting time on him if that was the end of the story. There was something off-putting to the way those birds stared, heads on one side, unblinking, like they'd figured her for a real idiot. She thought the old man might share their opinion.
What brings you here, Shai South?
Come looking for two children stole from our farm. Any luck? Asked Corlin. 6 days I've been up and down the mayor's side of the street, asking every pair of ears. But children ain't exactly a common sight around here, and no one's seen a hair of them. Or if they have, they ain't telling me. When I say the name Gregor Cantless, they shut up like I cast a spell of silence.
Spells of silence are a challenging cloth to weave, mused Zacharus, frowning up into an empty corner. So many variables.
There was a flapping outside, and a pigeon stuck its head through the curtains and gave a burbling coo.
She says they're in the mountains.
Oh,
the children. But pigeons are liars. They only tell you what you want to hear.
And the old man stuck his tongue in the seeds in his palm and started crunching them between his yellow front teeth. Shai was already minded to beat a retreat when Camling called from behind.
Your breakfast!
What do you reckon those two are about?
Asked Shai as she slipped back into her chair and flicked away a couple of crumbs their host had missed.
Prospecting, I heard, said Lam.
You ain't been listening to me at all, have you?
I try to avoid it. If they want our help, I dare say they'll ask. Till then, it ain't our business.
Can you imagine either of them asking for help?
Nope, said Lamb. So I reckon it'll never be our business, will it?
Definitely not. That's why I want to know.
I used to be curious, long time ago.
What happened?
Lamb waved his three-fingered hand at his scar-covered face. Breakfast was cold porridge, runny egg, and grey bacon, and the porridge weren't the freshest, and the bacon may well not have derived from a pig. All whisked in front of Shai on imported crockery, with trees and flowers painted into it in gilt. Camling with an air of smarmy pride, like there was no finer meal to be had anywhere in the circle of the world.
"This from a horse?"
she muttered to Lamb, prodding at that meat and half expecting it to tell her to stop. "Just be thankful it ain't from the rider."
On the trail we ate shit, but at least it was honest shit. What the hell's this?
Dishonest shit?
That's crease for you. You can get fine suljuk plates, but only slops to eat off 'em. Everything back to bloody front.
She realized the chatter had all faded, the scraping of her fork about the only noise. Hairs prickled on the back of her neck, and she slowly turned. Six men were adding their boot prints to the mud-caked floor. Five were the kind of thugs you saw a lot of in Crease, spreading out among the tables to find watchful places, each wearing that ready slouch, said they were better than you, 'cause there were more of them, and they all had blades. The sixth was a different prospect. Short, but hugely wide, and with a big belly on him, too, a suit of fine clothes bulging at the buttons, like the tailor who'd been awful optimistic with the measurements. He was black-skinned, with a fuzz of grey hair, one earlobe stretched out around a thick golden ring, hole in the middle big enough almost for Shai to have got a fist through. He looked pleased with himself to an untold degree, smiling on everything as though it was all exactly the way he liked it. Shai disliked him right off. Most likely jealousy. Nothing ever seemed to be the way she liked it, after all.
"Don't worry,"
he boomed in a voice spilling over with good humour.
"You can all keep on eating, if you want to be shitting water all day."
And he burst out laughing, and slapped one of his men on the back, and near knocked him into some fool's breakfast. He made his way between the tables, calling out hellos by name, shaking hands and patting shoulders, a long stick with a bone handle tapping at the boards. Shai watched him come, easing a little sideways in her chair and slipping the bottom button of her vest open so the grip of her knife poked out nice and perky. Lamb just sat eating with eyes on his food, not looking up even, when the fat man stopped right next to their table and said,
"I'm Papa Ring."
"I'd made a prediction to that effect," said Shai.
"You're Shai South."
"It ain't a secret."
"And you must be Lamb."
"If I must, I guess I must."
"Look for the big fucking Northman, with a face like a chopping block, they told me."
Papa Ring swung a free chair away from the next door table.
"Mind if I sit?"
"What if I said yes?" asked Shai.
He paused halfway down, leaning heavy on his stick.
"Most likely I'd say sorry, but sit anyway." "Sorry."
And he lowered himself the rest of the way.
"I got no fucking graces at all, they tell me. Ask anyone, no fucking graces."
Shai took the quickest glance across the room. Savian hadn't even looked up, but she caught the faintest gleam of a blade ready under the table. That made her feel a little better. "He didn't give much to your face, Savian, but he was a reassurance at your back." Unlike Camling, their proud host was hurrying over now, rubbing his hands together so hard Shai could hear them hiss.
"Welcome, Papa. You're very welcome."
"Why wouldn't I be?"
"No reason. No reason at all."
If Camling had rubbed his hands any faster, he might have made fire.
"As long as there's no trouble." "Who'd want trouble? I'm here to talk."
talks how it always begins. Talks how everything begins. My concern is how it will conclude.
How's a man to know that till he's talked? Asked Lamb, still not looking up.
Exactly so, said Papa Ring, smiling like it was the best day of his life.
All right, said Camling, reluctantly.
Will you be taking food? Ring snorted.
Your food is shit, as these two unfortunates are only now discovering. You can lose yourself.
Now look, Papa, this is my place.
Happy chance.
Of a sudden, Ring's smile seemed to have an edge to it.
You'll know just where to lose yourself.
Camling swallowed, then scraped away with the sourest of expressions. The chatter gradually came up again, but honed to a nervous point now.
One of the strongest arguments I ever saw for there being no God is the existence of Leonard Camling, muttered Ring as he watched their host depart.
The joints of his chair creaked unhappily as he settled back, all good humour again.
So, how are you finding Greece?
Filthy, in every sense.
Shy poked her bacon away, then tossed her fork down and pushed the plate away, too. There could never be too great a distance between her and that bacon, far as she was concerned. She let her hands flop into her lap, where one just happened to rest right on her knife's handle. Imagine that.
That is how we like it. You meet the mayor?
I don't know, said Shy. Did we?
I know you did.
Why ask, then?
Watching my manners, such as they are, though I don't deceive myself they come close to hers. She's got graces, don't she, our mayor?
And Ring gently rubbed the polished wood of the table with one palm.
Smooth as mirror glass. When she talks, you feel swaddled in a goose-down blanket, don't you? The worthier folks around here, they tend to move in her orbit. Those manners, that way. The worthy folks lap that stuff up, but let's not pretend you all are two of the worthy ones, eh?
Could be we're aspiring to be worthier, said Shy.
I'm all for aspiration, said Ring. God knows I came here with nothing, but the mayor won't help you better yourselves.
And you will?
Ring gave a chuckle, deep and joyful, like you might get from a kindly uncle.
No, 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 but at least I'll be honest about it.
You'll be honest about your dishonesty.
I never claim to do anything other than sell folk what they want and make no judgments on them for their desires. Dare say the mayor gave you the impression I'm quite the evil bastard.
We can get that impression all by ourselves, said Shy.
Ring grinned at her.
Quick, aren't you?
I'll try not to leave you behind.
She do all the talking?
The vast majority, said Lamb, out the side of his mouth.
Reckon he's waiting for something worth replying to, said Shy.
Ring kept grinning.
Well, that's a very reasonable policy. You seem like reasonable folks.
Lamb shrugged.
You ain't really got to know us yet.
That's the very reason I came along, to get to know you better. And maybe just to offer some friendly advice.
I'm getting old for advice, said Lamb. Even the friendly kind.
You're getting old for brawling, too. But I do hear tell you might be involving yourself in some bare-fist business we got coming to Crease.
Lamb shrugged again.
I fought a bout or two in my youth.
I see that, said Ring, with an eye on Lamb's battered face. But keen devotee though I am of the brawling arts, I'd rather this fight didn't happen at all.
Worried your man might lose? Asked Shy. She really couldn't drag Ring's grin loose at all.
Not really. My man's famous for beating a lot of famous men, and beating them bad. But the fact is, I'd rather the mayor packed up nice and quiet. Don't get me wrong, I don't mind seeing a little blood spilled. Shows people you care. But too much is awful bad for business. And I got big plans for this place. Good plans. But you don't care about that, do you?
Everyone's got plans, said Shy.
and everyone thinks theirs are good. As when one set of good plans gets tangled with another, things tend to slide downhill.
Just tell me this, then, and if the answer's yes, I'll leave you to enjoy your shitty breakfast in peace. Have you given the mayor a certain yes, or can I still make you a better offer?
Ring's eyes moved between them, and neither spoke, and he took that for encouragement, and maybe it was.
I may not have the graces, but I'm always willing to deal. Just tell me what she's promised you.
Lamb looked up for the first time.
Gregor Cantless.
Shai was watching him hard, and she saw Ring's smile slip at the name. You know him, then? She asked.
He works for me, has worked for me at times.
Was he working for you when he burned my farm and killed my friend and stole two children from me? Asked Lamb.
Ring sat back, rubbing at his jaw, a trace of frown showing.
Quite an accusation, stealing children. I can tell you now, I'd have no part of that.
Seems you got one even so, said Shai.
Only your word for it. What kind of a man would I be if I gave my people up on your say-so?
I don't care one fucking shit what kind of man you are, snarled Lamb, knuckles white around his cutlery, and Ring's men stirred unhappily, and Shai saw Savian sitting up, watchful, but Lamb took no notice of any of it.
Give me Cantless, and we're done. Get in my way, there'll be trouble.
And he frowned as he saw he'd bent his knife at a right angle against the tabletop. Ring mildly raised his brows.
You're very confident, given nobody's heard of you.
I've been through this before. I got a fair idea how it turns out.
My man ain't bent cutlery.
He will be.
Just tell us where Cantless is, said Shai, and we'll be on our way and out of yours. Papa Ring looked for the first time like he might be running short of patience.
Girl, do you suppose you could sit back and let me and your father talk this out?
Not really. Maybe it's my ghost blood, but I'm cursed with a contrary temperament. Folk warn me off a thing, I just start thinking on how to go about it. Can't help myself. Ring took a long breath and forced himself back to reasonable.
I understand. Someone stole my children. There'd be nowhere in the circle of the world for those bastards to run to. But don't make me your enemy, when I can every bit as easily be your friend. I can't just hand you Cantless. Maybe that's what the mayor would do, but it ain't my way. I tell you what, though. Next time he comes to town, we can all sit down and talk this out. Get to the truth of it. See if we can't find your young ones. I'll help you every way I can, you got my word.
Your word? And Shai curled back her lip and spat onto her cold bacon. If it was bacon.
I got no graces, but I got my word.
And Ring stabbed at the table with his thick forefinger.
That's what everything stands on my side of the street. Folk are loyal to me 'cause I'm loyal to them. Break that, I got nothing. Break that, I am nothing.
He leaned closer, beckoning like he had the killer offer to make.
But forget my word and just look at it this way. You want the mayor's help, you're gonna have to fight for it. And believe me, that'll be one hell of a fight. You want my help?
He gave the biggest shrug his big shoulders could manage, like even considering an alternative was madness.
All you got to do is not fight.
Shai didn't like the feel of this bastard one bit, but she didn't like the feel of the mayor much more, and she had to admit there was something in what he was saying. Lamb nodded as he straightened out his knife between finger and thumb and tossed it on his plate. Then he stood.
What if I'd rather fight?
And he strode for the door, the queue for breakfast scurrying to part for him. Ring blinked, brows drawn in with puzzlement.
Who'd rather fight?
Shai got up without answering and hurried after, weaving between the tables.
Just think about it, that's all I'm asking. Be reasonable.
And they were out into the street.
Hold up there, Lamb. Lamb!
She dodged through a bleating mass of little grey sheep, had to lurch back to let a pair of wagons squelch past. She caught sight of Temple, sitting high up astride a big beam, hammer in hand, the strong square frame of Mahood's shop already higher than the slumping buildings on either side. He raised one hand in greeting.
70!
She bellowed at him. She couldn't see his face, but the shoulders of his silhouette slumped in a faintly heartening way.
Will you hold up?
She caught Lamb by the arm just as he was getting close to the mayor's church of Dice. The thugs around the door, hardly to be told from the ones who'd come with Papa Ring, watching them hard-eyed.
What do you think you're doing?
Taking the mayor up on her offer.
Just 'cause that fat fool rubbed you the wrong way?
Lamb came close, and suddenly it seemed that he was looming over her from quite the height.
That? And 'cause his man stole your brother and sister?
You think I'm happy about that?
She hissed at him, getting angry now.
But we don't know the ins and outs of it. He seemed reasonable enough, considering.
Lamb frowned back towards Camlings.
Some men only listen to violence.
Some men only talk it. Never took you for one of them. Did we come for Pitt and Roe or for blood?
She'd meant to make a point, not ask a question, but for a moment it looked like he had to consider the answer.
I'm thinking I might get all three.
She stared at him for a moment.
Who the fuck are you? There was a time men could rub your face in the dung and you'd just thank 'em and ask for more.
And you know what?
He peeled her fingers from his arm with a grip that was almost painful.
I've remembered. I didn't like it much.
And he stomped muddy footprints up the steps of the mayor's place, leaving Shy behind in the street. That simple. Temple tapped a few more shavings from the joint, then nodded to Lamb, and together they lowered the beam, tenon sliding snugly into mortise.
Ha!
Lamb slapped Temple on the back.
Not so nice as to see a job done well. You got clever hands, lad. Damn clever for a man washes up out of streams. Sort of hands you can turn to anything.
He looked down at his own big, battered, three-fingered hand and made a fist of it.
Mine only ever really been good for one thing.
And he thumped at the beam until it came flush. Temple had expected carpentry to be almost as much of a chore as riding drag, but he had to admit he was enjoying himself, and it was getting harder every day to pretend otherwise. There was something in the smell of fresh-sawn timber when the mountain breeze slipped into the valley, long enough for one to smell anything but shit, that wafted away his suffocating regrets and let him breathe free. His hands had found old skills with hammer and chisel, and he had worked out the habits of the local wood, pale and straight and strong. Mahood's hirelings silently conceded he knew his business, and soon were taking his instructions without a second word, working at scaffold and pulleys with little skill but great enthusiasm, the frame sprouting up twice as fast and twice as fine as Temple had hoped.
"Where's Shy?"
he asked offhand, as though it was no part of a plan to dodge his latest payment. It was getting to be a game between them, one he never seemed to win.
"She's still touring town, asking questions about Pitt and Roe. New folk coming in every day to ask. Probably she's trying Papa Ring's side of the street by now."
"Is that safe?"
"I doubt it."
"Shouldn't you stop her?"
Lamb snorted as he pushed a peg into Temple's fishing hand.
"Last time I tried to stop Shy, she was 10 years old, and it didn't stick then."
Temple worked the peg into its hole.
"Once she has a destination in mind, she isn't one to stop halfway."
"Gotta love that about her."
Lamb had a trace of pride in his voice as he passed the mallet.
"She's no coward, that girl."
"So why are you helping me, not her?"
"'Cause I reckon I've found a way to Pitt and Roe already. I'm just waiting for Shai to come round to the cost.
Which is?
The mayor wants a favour.
There was a long pause, measured out by the tapping of Temple's mallet, accompanied by the distant sounds of other hammers on other more slovenly building sites scattered about the town.
She and Papa Ring bet Crease on a fight.
Temple looked around.
They bet Crease? They each own half the town, more or less.
Lamb looked out at it, crammed thoughtlessly into both sides of that winding valley, like the place was an almighty gut, people and goods and animals squeezing in one end, and shit and beggars and money squirting out the other.
But the more you get, the more you want, and all either one of them wants is the half they haven't got.
Temple puffed out his cheeks as he twisted at the next peg.
I imagine one of them is sure to be disappointed.
At least one. The worst enemies are those that live next door, my father used to tell me. These two have been squabbling for years, and neither one's come out on top, so they're putting on a fight. Winner takes all.
A group of half-tame ghosts had spilled from one of the worse whorehouses, the better ones wouldn't let them in the door, and had knives out, taunting each other in common, knowing no words but swearing and the language of violence. That was more than enough to get by on in Crease.
Two men in a circle, murmured Lamb. More unlikely with a considerable audience and a fair few side bets. One comes out alive, one comes out otherwise, and everyone else comes out thoroughly entertained.
Shit, breathed Temple.
Papa Rings brought in a man called Glamour Golden, a Northman. Big name in his day. I hear he's been fighting for money in pits and pens all across the near country, and done a lot of winning, too. The mayor, well, she's been searching high and low for someone to stand up for her.
He gave Temple a long look, and it was easy enough to guess the rest.
Shit.
It was one thing to fight for your life out there on the plains when the ghosts were coming at you and offering no alternatives. Another to wait weeks for the moment, choose to step out in front of a crowd, and batter, twist, and crush the life from a man with your hands.
Have you had any practice at that sort of thing?
As luck would have it, my luck being what it is, more than a little.
Are you sure the mayor's on the right side of this? Asked Temple, thinking of all the wrong sides he had taken.
Lamb frowned down at the ghosts, who had evidently resolved their differences without bloodshed and were noisily embracing.
In my experience, there's rarely such a thing as a right side, and when there is, I've an uncanny knack of picking out the other. All I know is Gregor Cantless killed my friend and burned my farm and stole two children I swore to protect.
Lamb's voice had a cold edge on it as he shifted his frown to the White House, cold enough to bring Temple out in goose flesh all over.
Papa Ring's standing by him, so he's made himself my enemy. The mayor's standing against him, and that makes her my friend.
Are things ever really that simple?
When you step into a circle with the intention of killing a man, it's best if they are.
Temple!
The sun was low, and the shadow of one of the great columns had fallen across the street below, so it took a moment to work out who was calling from the swirling traffic.
Temple!
Another moment before he placed the smiling face tipped towards him, bright-eyed and with a bushy yellow beard.
That you up there?
Still a third before he connected the world in which he knew that man to the world he lived in now, and recognition washed over him like a bucket of ice water over a peaceful sleeper.
Bermy?
He breathed.
Friend of yours? Asked Lamb.
We know each other,
Temple managed to whisper. He slipped down the ladder with shaky hands, all the time tingling with the rabbit's urge to run. But where to? He had been beyond lucky to survive the last time he fled the company of the Gracious Hand, and was far from sure his divine support would stretch to another effort. He picked his way to Burmy with reluctant little steps, picking at the hem of his shirt, like a child that knows he has a slap coming and more than likely deserves it.
"You all right?" asked the Styrian. "You look ill." "Is Koska with you?"
Temple could hardly get the words out, he felt that sick. God might have blessed him with clever hands, but he'd cursed him with a weak stomach. Burmy was all smiles, though.
"I'm happy to say he's not, nor any of those other bastards. I dare say he's still floundering about the near country, bragging to that bloody biographer and searching for ancient gold he'll never find. If he hasn't given up and gone back to Starrickland to get drunk."
Temple closed his eyes and expelled a lungful of the most profound relief.
"Thank heaven."
He put his hand on the Styrian's shoulder and leaned over, bent nearly double, head spinning.
"You sure you're all right?" "Yes, I am."
He grabbed Burmy around the back and hugged him tight.
"Better than all right."
He was ecstatic. He breathed free once again. He kissed Burmy's bearded cheek with a noisy smack.
"What the hell brings you to the arse of the world?" "You showed me the way. After that town, what was the name of it?"
"Avostok," muttered Temple. Burmy's eyes took on a guilty squint.
"I've done things I'm not proud of, but that, nothing else but murder. Koska sent me to find you afterwards."
"He did?"
"Said you were the most important man in the whole damn company. 2 days out, I ran into a fellowship coming west to mine for gold. Half of them were from Puranti, from my hometown. Imagine that. It's as if God has a purpose."
"Almost as if."
"I left the company of the fucking finger, and off we went."
"You put Koska behind you." Cheating death once again had given Temple a faintly drunken feeling.
"Far, far behind."
"You a carpenter now?"
"One way to clear my debts."
"Shit on your debts, brother. We're heading back into the hills. Got a claim up on the Brownwash. Men are just sieving nuggets out of the mud up there."
He slapped Temple on the shoulder. "You should come with us. Always room for a carpenter with a sense of humor. We've a cabin, but it could do with some work."
Temple swallowed. How often on the trail, choking on the dust of Buckhorn's herd, or chafing under the sting of Shai's jibes, had he dreamed of an offer just like this? An easy way, unrolling before his willing feet.
"When do you leave?"
5 days, maybe 6.
"What would a man need to bring?"
"Just some good clothes and a shovel. We've got the rest."
Temple looked for the trick in Burmy's face, but there was no sign of one. Perhaps there was a god after all.
"Are things ever really that simple?"
Burmy laughed.
"You're the one always loved to make things complicated. This is the new frontier, my friend, the land of opportunities. You got anything keeping you here?"
"I suppose not."
Temple glanced up at Lam, a big black shape on the frame of Mahood's building.
"Nothing but debts?"
Yesterday's news.
"I'm looking for a pair of children."
Blank faces.
"Their names are Roe and Pitt."
Sad shakes of the head.
"They're 10 and 6. 7. He'd be 7 now."
Sympathetic mumbles.
"They were stole by a man named Gregor Cantless."
A glimpse of scared eyes as the door slammed in her face. Shai had to admit she was getting tired. She'd near worn her boots through, tramping up and down the crooked length of Main Street, which wormed longer and more crooked every day, as folk poured in off the plains, throwing up tents or wedging new hovels into some sliver of mud, or just leaving their wagons rotting alongside the trail. Her shoulders were bruised from pushing through the bustle, her legs sore from scaling the valley sides to talk to folk in shacks clinging to the incline.
Her voice was a croak from asking the same old questions over and over in the gambling halls and husk dens and drinking sheds, until she could hardly tell them apart, one from another. There were a good few places they wouldn't let her in now. Said she put off the customers. Probably she did. Probably Lamb had the right of it, just waiting for Cantlis to come to him. But Shai had never been much good at waiting. "That's your ghost blood," her mother would have said. But then her mother hadn't been much good at waiting either.
"Look here, it's Shai South. You all right, Hedges?"
Though she could tell the answer at a glance. He'd never looked flushed with success, but he'd had a spark of hope about him on the trail. It had guttered since and left him greyed out and ragged. Crease was no place to make your hopes healthier, no place to make anything healthier, far as she could tell.
"Thought you were looking for work."
"Couldn't find none. Not for a man with a leg like this. Wouldn't have thought I led the charge up there at Osrung, would you?"
She wouldn't have, but he'd said so already, so she kept her silence.
"Still looking for your kin?"
"Will be until I find them. You heard anything?"
"You're the first person said more than 5 words together to me in a week. Wouldn't think I led a charge, would you? Wouldn't think that."
They stood there, awkward, both knowing what was coming next. Didn't stop it coming, though.
"Can you spare a couple of bits?"
"Aye, a few."
She delved in her pocket and handed him the coins Temple had handed her an hour before, then headed on quick. No one likes to stand that close to failure, do they? Worried it might rub off.
"Ain't you gonna tell me not to drink it all?" he called after her. "I'm no preacher. Reckon folk have the right to pick their own method of destruction." "So they do. You're not so bad, Shai South. You're all right."
"We'll have to differ on that,"
she muttered, leaving Hedges to shuffle for the nearest drinking hole, never too many steps away in Crease, even for a man whose steps were miserly as his.
"I'm looking for a pair of children."
"I cannot assist you there, but I have other tidings."
This woman was a strange-looking character, clothes that must have been fine in their time, but their time long past, and the month since full of mud and stray food. She drew back her sagging coat with a flourish and produced a sheaf of crumpled papers.
"What are they? Newsbills?"
Shai was already regretting talking to this woman, but the path here was a narrow stretch of mud between sewer stream and rotten porches, and her bulging belly wasn't giving space to pass.
"You have a keen eye for quality. You wish to make a purchase?"
"Not really.
The faraway happenings of politics and power are of no interest?"
"They never seem to bear much on my doings."
"Perhaps it is your ignorance of current affairs keeps you down so."
"I always took it to be the greed, laziness, and ill-temper of others, plus a fair share of bad luck. But I reckon you'll have it your way."
"Everyone does."
But the woman didn't move. Shai sighed. Given her knack for upsetting folk, she thought she might give indulgence a try.
"All right, then. Deliver me from ignorance."
The woman displayed the utmost bill and spoke with mighty self-importance.
"Rebels defeated at Mulcover, routed by Union troops under General Brint. How about that?"
"Unless they've been defeated there a second time. That happened before I even left the near country. Everyone knows it."
"The lady requires something fresher,"
muttered the old woman, rooting through her thumbed-over bundle.
"Styrian conflict ends. Sipani opens gates to the Snake of Talents."
That was at least 2 years before.
Shai was starting to think this woman was touched in the head, if that even meant anything, in a place where most were happy mad, dismal mad, or some other kind of mad that defied further description.
"A challenge, indeed."
The woman licked a dirty finger to leaf through her wares, and came up with one that looked a veritable antique.
"Legate Sarmis menaces border of the near country? Fears of imperial incursion?"
Sarmis has been menacing for decades. He's the most menacing legate you ever heard of.
Then it's true as it ever was.
News spoils quick, friend, like milk.
I say it gets better if carefully kept, like wine.
I'm glad you like the vintage, but I ain't buying yesterday's news.
The woman cradled her papers like a mother hiding an infant from bird attack, and as she leaned forward, Shai saw the top was tore off her tall hat and got a view of the scabbiest scalp imaginable, and a smell of rot almost knocked her over.
No worse than tomorrow's, is it?
And the woman swept her aside and strode on, waving her old bills over her head.
News! I have news!
Shai took a long, hard breath before she set off. Damn, but she was tired. Greece was no place to get less tired, far as she could tell.
I'm looking for a pair of children.
The one in the middle treated her to something you'd have had to call a leer.
I'll give you children, girl.
The one on the left burst out laughing. The one on the right grinned, and a bit of chagger juice dribbled out of his mouth and ran down into his beard. From the look of his beard, it wasn't his first dribble either. They were an unpromising trio, all right. But if Shai had stuck to the promising, she'd have been done in Crease her first day there.
They were stolen from our farm.
Probably nothing else there worth stealing.
Being honest, I dare say you're right. Man called Gregor Cantler stole them.
The mood shifted right off. The one on the right stood up, frowning. The one on the left spat juice over the railing. Leary leered more than ever.
You got some ghoul asking questions over here, girl. Some fucking ghoul.
You ain't the first to say so. Probably best I just take my gall away on down the street.
She made to move on, but he stepped down from the porch to block her way, pointed a waving finger towards her face.
You know what? You got kind of a ghosty look to you.
Half-breed, maybe,
grunted one of his friends. Shai set her jaw.
Quarter, as it goes.
Leary took his leer into realms of facial contortion.
Well, we don't care for your kind over on this side of the street.
Better quarter ghost than all assholes, surely.
There was that knack for upsetting folk. His brows drew in, and he took a step at her.
Why, you bloody—
Without thinking, she put her right hand on the grip of her knife and said,
You better stop right there.
His eyes narrowed, annoyed, like he hadn't expected straight-up defiance, but couldn't back down with his friends watching.
You best not put your hand on that knife, unless you're going to use it, girl.
Whether I use it or not depends on whether you stop there or not. My hopes ain't high, but maybe you're cleverer than you look.
Leave her be.
A big man stood in the doorway. Big hardly did him justice. His fist up on the frame beside him looked about the size of Shai's head.
You can stay out of this, said Leary. I could, but I'm not. You say you're looking for Cantless,
he asked, eyes moving over to Shai.
That's right.
Don't tell her nothing, snapped Squinty.
The big man's eyes drifted back.
You can shut up.
He had to duck his head to get through the doorway.
Or I can shut you up.
The other two men backed off to give him room, and he needed a lot. He looked bigger still as he stepped out of the shadows, taller than Lamb even, and maybe bigger in the chest and shoulder too. A real monster. But he spoke soft, accent thick with the north.
Don't pay these idiots no mind. They've got big bones for fights they're sure of winning, but otherwise not enough for a toothpick.
He took the couple of steps down into the street, boards groaning under his great boots, and stood towering over Leary.
Cantless is from the same cloth, he said. A puffed-up fool with a lot of vicious in him.
For all his size, there was a sad sag to his face, a droop to his blonde moustache, a sorry greying to the stubble about it.
More or less what I used to be, if it comes to that.
He owes Papa Ring a lot of money, as I heard it. Ain't been around for a while now, though. Not much more I can tell you.
Well, thanks for that much.
My pleasure.
The big man turned his washed-out blue eyes on Leary.
Get out of her way.
Leary gave Shy a particularly nasty